Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks for listening. Good show today. We've got my buddy Peter Schrager from Good Morning Football and Fox Sports. We went all over the place. NFL, TV, music, pandemic, everything with Schrager. Good conversation. Just a freewheeling conversation. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. If you missed any recent episodes of the SI Media Podcast, dip into the archives. We had Ernie Johnson from TNT and Inside the NBA last week. Jim Miller was on 2 weeks ago. Al Michaels, Dan Patrick, Kevin Harlan, all on the podcast recently as well. So give those a listen, subscribe, rate, and review. All right, let's get to this week's show with the always entertaining Peter Schrager. All right, joining me now, one of my favorites from Good Morning Football on the NFL Network, Peter Schrager. Schrags, how's it going?
What's up, Jimmy? I love being on the podcast. I was honored to get the text, and here I am.
I love having you. You know that. Give me a little... I mentioned Good Morning Football. We know you're on there Monday through Friday. What's going on with the Fox stuff? Because you were usually on the pre-pregame show. Are you doing that from home this year now? You're not obviously traveling to LA every week.
Well, it's not that obvious. That could start soon. I mean, it's been fluid. But yes, it's actually worked out really well. I've been in a New York studio, and they've been using me just as much as they were. So I play the role, or not the role, but my role is essentially what you see Jay Glazer on the noon show at 11 a.m. That's me. And I'm the first one with the news. And this year it's been a really important role because 11 a.m. is when these COVID tests are coming out. So people are putting on their football. And Sunday morning, I've become a health expert and a health and a medical guy because I'm out there telling you exactly how many PCR tests have been conducted and when this game's going to be. And I'm the first person on the screen for Fox kind of to start their day of football. So it's been a big role, and it's actually worked out really well. And the chemistry is shockingly really good with the guys who are in studio.
It's funny you say that, because I was going to ask you, because I know for me, I mean, you're in the business of the NFL. I'm not. But it's crazy to me that, you know, you basically you wake up to start your day, you start scrolling through Twitter, and then like it seems like between 8 and 11 is when all these COVID news breaks happen. And you're actually on the air with Good Morning Football. That's got to be a little bit tough if you're like, you know, in the middle of some segment and you guys are, you know, you guys do obviously hardcore football stuff, but you're a lighthearted show. Yes. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, this game's being postponed and they have, you know, four tests and you're live on the air. That's got to cause some commotion, I would guess, in your ears.
Yeah. And it's a balance of tone, but like, you're right. So 9 a.m. is when I'll get the text from my sources at the league, because I've plugged into those guys. It's a little earlier than when it comes out everywhere and it's like, hey, Falcons facilities shut down, right. Titans have two tests, whatever. And we're in the middle of a segment where Kyle Brandt is, you know, talking about Saved by the Bell and comparing it to the Denver Broncos offensive line and why, you know, Lisa Turtle is the next Philip Lindsay or whatever it is. Who knows? You know, like, and then it's like, wait a second, guys, we gotta stop down. Yeah. I'm just saying, quick little news. We've got two Titans, you know, assistant linebackers coaches who have COVID and they're shutting down. That's what it is. But I really find it interesting to see how fluid, like, people are adapting. So, you know, at first, when we had the first test with the Falcons, with A.J. Terrell being positive, it was like, it started off our show on a Sunday for, you know, Fox, and it was, what are the implications? And I'll tell you, Jimmy, I went in and I read the 77-page document, and it was the only way I could ever learn this stuff. And I didn't go to medical school. I don't have a medical degree, but like, I will put myself, it's nothing to be patting myself, but like, I know that document as well as any single non-NFL medical person in the world right now. So I feel pretty confident knowing the difference between this kind of test versus that kind of test. And I'm pretty confident that you'll get as good a news on what it all means. And yet between us, fans don't really want to hear it all. They don't. They want to know, is my team playing on Sunday or Monday or Tuesday? Well, I don't really, you know, and it's one of those deals where we're figuring it out as we go. How much information do we want to know who has it? If it's Cam Newton, yes. But if it's an assistant GM, are we really going into the, like, pointing out, I don't know. So,
well, fans want to know from a fantasy gambling standpoint, like, one of the teams, I guess, I forgot which team it was this week, had like the strength and conditioning coach tested positive. That's not really going to affect the fans. The only thing I would say is, and I said this with baseball from the beginning, and I've said this with the end, you know, when it comes out that this team had positive tests, that team shutting down a facility, this team had this coach, this, the NFL, the one thing I would say to fans is that the NFL is not shutting down under any circumstances, basically. And MLB was in the same, but when the Marlins had those tests the first week of the season, people were saying that the season was going to shut down. And I said, the season's not shutting down because the Florida Marlins, like once these seasons start, baseball started, NFL started, they're not stopping. They'll rearrange as the NFL is done. And that's the one thing. I mean, I have no idea what's going on with the schedule. I know there's like all these weird like changes. I can't, just let me know what games are on Sunday. I'll be there and that's it.
But I have a
fans should take comfort. The league's not shutting down no matter what happens here.
Look, I've got an investment both professionally because this league is what's putting food on my table. They're my employers, all this stuff. I also have an investment personally in a lot of the people that are affected by the COVID tests in the buildings. I know all these guys. I know all the coaches. I know a lot of the players. I know all that stuff. So I have an investment, but there is something that like set me off a couple of weeks ago on Twitter. And again, it's all relative. I'm not upset really about it, but like Kevin O'Connor, who I think is good on the NBA, he works for Simmons on the Ringer, was like, the NBA is about to complete their playoffs and we've had 172 games and there's been no tests. And the lesson as always is, whereas the NFL is postponed, the bubble works and the bubble works. And I like never do this, but I responded to him and I don't know him that well.
Yeah.
I don't know him at all. I like following his feed. I listen to his podcast with Chris Vernon and I tweeted back and I'm like, the NBA had 20 teams and there's 12 players and there's like five or six coaches and they had an abbreviated season. The NFL, you have 65 players travel with you game to game. You have 30 people on the coaching staff. You have 40 people in the building. And it was a 5-month season. We've got to get in. Like, the bubble didn't make a lot of sense for the NFL just because of how difficult it is to do a bubble. And you could say, yes, but if that was the rules, they would have done it and the bubble would be fine. There'd be no positive tests. All right. You tell a New York Jets player, you can't leave your hotel room for the final 3 months of the season. And you're 0-6 or 0-5 right now. And like, you've got to stick with it. Like, it's a lot as it is. I don't know if the players would actually even listen at that point. And I also think you look at some of the star players, they take a Deshaun Watson or a Kirk Cousins or forget what their thoughts are on the coronavirus. Like, when you're making $30 million a year and you're told you got to live in your hotel for the next 3 months and your team's 1-5, like, I think there's some really interesting decisions that would have to be made. And I don't think people think of that out. They just say, NFL, no. Trust me, the NFL is trying their hardest to make it happen.
And again, this is the problem with Twitter. And it's not just Twitter. I mean, now it's real life, given where we are. But again, two things can be true. Like, yes, the bubble did work for the NBA.
It was great.
And the NBA and the NFL is not going to shut down. Unless you have a player drop dead, the NFL is not shutting down. And most of these cases, the players are asymptomatic or they're better in a couple of days. The NFL is not shutting down because of that. So, like, yes, the NBA bubble worked. The NFL will keep rolling on. Like, I don't – like. To me, that's just the way it's going
to
be.
Yeah, so. To me, talking to a lot of the NFL guys, their concerns are the coaches still. Like, you know, and I'm not going to list the ages of all the head coaches, but you know, the Buccaneers have an assistant coach, Tom Moore. He's 81 years old. He travels with the team. Like, he's on the road in Chicago on a Thursday night game. And I'm like, that's what they're concerned about. How do we make sure that this is a healthy environment for our staff that are of maybe higher risk? But yeah,
I will say this, and on a lighter note, but I'm actually being dead serious, no pun intended. I don't know why all the coaches don't go to the Andy Reid shield.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't. I've seen it, and some of them have.
It looks so much more comfortable than the mask. Yeah. Just go shield.
Yeah.
Vic Fangio had the shield last week, I believe.
He did, and he won.
Yeah. Go with the shield. Get the mask. You're pulling them down. You know. Although I guess Andy Reid in Buffalo with the rain, the shield might have been a little bit of an issue.
Yeah. I hate talking COVID all day. Yeah, yeah. It's not where we want to start, but I do think that it is a topic this year, and it's the reason why I'm doing a show from home, and it's a reason why we're on delay on NFL Network a little bit. It is what it is, and we got to be fluid and adjust. And unfortunately, I don't think the NFL could have possibly pulled off a bubble situation.
Yeah, my only thing is the fans should calm down. The league's not going to shut down no matter what you read in the morning about facilities being closed, and just enjoy the season. I did talk to Kyle about this the last time he was on. I mean, your show, Good Morning Football, that's a rough show to have to do from home without you guys in person. You guys, it's such a like
physical
personality, chemistry, even physical stuff, you know. And, you know, during the summer months, it was probably not a big deal. But once the season has started now, It's got to be a little bit of a bummer that you still can't, you know, get back into the studio.
Yeah, we'll see. We're honestly playing it week to week. We're not ruling out the chance that we do get back to studio. I agree. The show is better in person, but we had the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours where all off season we were on delay. So like, I know the delay. Nate knows the delay. Kay knows the delay. Kyle knows the delay. And the home studio stuff has actually led to some funny moments on the show, whether it be Kyle's kids barging in and Kyle yelling at them that this is how the lights stay on, me, daddy doing work. Like, that was hilarious. And then on my end, you know, I've been jumping rental place to rental place, trying to figure out a place where I can, you know, do this show. And there's a different background every day on my show. So like, we found ways to make it our show. Obviously it's not ideal. And I do.
The one thing is that I find annoying is that when the pandemic first started and everyone was working from home, the hosts, not just your show, every show, no matter, not just sports, everyone was like, okay, well, this is a new world. We don't know what we're doing, but you know, we're live and we're going to roll with it. And like the gaffes and mishaps would play. There was the one show you guys did where like Kyle had to go outside because he lost the power. But now I feel like people are trying to do the shows clean, like, you know, no mistakes. Let's be professional. Like, we're working from home. No, give us all the, like, I want to see like someone's kid running the screen. I want to see someone's power go out.
Like, there was a charm to it. Like,
I don't watch
the late night shows much anymore. I did at a certain age, but like, seeing Jimmy Fallon with his kids was kind of nice. It was endearing. Yeah, yeah. Seeing Seth Meyers not dressed up in a suit and tie doing comedy was kind of nice. And slowly but surely, I think everyone's getting back to studio. And it's like, nope, the new normal was just temporary. We're going back to the old way. We need to see Jimmy Fallon in a shirt and tie. And I don't know. Do you? I don't necessarily have to.
I don't really want to see Fallon at all, but that's besides the point.
Not a Fallon guy, I see.
I like the other guys better. I like Colbert and Kimmel better. Kimmel had Borat on last night. I have a big Borat. I might as well discuss it now because I was going to say, no matter what happens in the NFL or sports, the only thing that matters this week is that Borat comes out on Friday.
When it comes out, what does that mean? It's on demand or it's in a theater?
Prime, Amazon Prime.
All right. And you will, that's the kind of thing where like, all right, Friday night, I'm going to watch Borat. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't care.
Loved Borat, like one of my favorite movie going experiences in my life. But I saw there's a New York Times article like when Sacha Baron Cohen got serious and like Borat's like a like important thing. I'm like, I don't necessarily need to hear that either.
But no, the trailer came out. It's not serious.
It's Borat.
In any way,
it's not
Shepard.
Like it's
no.
not.
No, he no. It's the same exact thing as the first one from what I saw. I mean, yes, he does. I guess there is one point where he crashes a Mike Pence rally, but that's not serious. He's, you know, he's doing the Borat stuff. I can't really think about anything else this week.
This is me. This is what we do when I come on your podcast. Yeah. Who now in the comedy world is someone that you would feel that way? You drop everything and be like, I'm seeing that movie or that show. Is there anyone else? Like, Borat gets me. Like, if there's a new Will Ferrell something, I'll probably see it no matter what. Like, I trust his comedic.
A really good question. I mean, I will say this. I will watch anything Sacha Baron Cohen does. Like, he did the Showtime show, the Made in America.
Yeah.
Anything Sacha Baron Cohen does, I will watch. He's someone. Larry, still Larry David. Like, I just saw, and now, you know, whatever. Trump people get pissed off, but I don't care. Julia Louis-Dreyfus just tweeted that her, Jason Alexander, and Larry David are doing like a reunion virtual thing that you can watch online Friday night. But it's like a fundraiser, I guess, for like a Democrat in Texas, which whatever. Okay. I don't, like, that's not going to stop me. If Larry David is doing something live on the internet, I'm going to watch it. There's just no two ways about it.
Are you a fan? And did you watch Bill Burr do Saturday Night Live?
I am a fan. I saw him live and it might have been the funniest thing I've ever seen live.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not Eddie Murphy raw, but I didn't see that live. But if you go, I mean, delirious. If you go live,
you're saying not Saturday Night Live, you're saying the time you saw Bill Burr in person.
I saw Bill Burr live do stand up. It was hysterical. I've had him on this podcast.
Have you?
Yeah, he was great. Made fun of me for being fat. It was very amusing. And I saw Saturday Night Live and I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I liked
I didn't like him
in the skits. That's a little weird.
Honestly, I actually thought the skits were surprisingly great. He did a skit where he played a football analyst on a show similar to ours. And I was chuckling because he was like the zany football guy. And they're trying to talk about social justice matters. And I'm like, Yeah, that's kind of what sports TV is these days. Like, yeah. You got to try to find a way to balance and talk football and X's and O's, and on the back end, we're also talking about the world and what's going on at large. So yeah. I appreciated that. Anyway, he's one of those guys that I would watch. Will Ferrell, I think, and I think still if Apatow puts out a movie or something, I'll probably see that.
Yeah, and Jerry Seinfeld is still, you know, anything if he's on a late night talk show, I make sure to DVR it and I'll watch anything Jerry. You know, he did that, his last stand up. People were saying it wasn't good.
The 23 hours one was great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
But especially now during a pandemic, I think anything where you can get Larry David is, you have to watch it because God only knows. Can you imagine him, you know, quarantined and.
Yeah,
avoiding the germ.
Hilarious. I feel like he was doing quarantine before the quarantine.
Right. Like that's right? The crazy thing about this is that the last season of Curb came out right at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Before we knew, you know, and he filmed it obviously way before the pandemic, and he had Perel on every table in his coffee shop.
And there's the scene where he's like hugging the doctor, and him and the doctor are having these embraces, and I'm like, oh, that's the last time we're gonna see that. What's the thing you miss in we're just taking this off the rails because I don't think you care about my thoughts on World Series ratings and whatever else. What's the thing you miss in person? Like as far as what was a conventional thing that you would always do that you have not been able to do?
I just had this conversation with my dad on Sunday because he was talking about here on Long Island, the movies are opening up.
Okay.
I think this weekend, I don't know, this weekend, next weekend, they're opening up. I didn't miss the movies.
Okay.
I miss a restaurant, which I know you can go to, but I'm talking about like a packed restaurant, atmosphere, buzz, you know, a good, like I really miss like a good steakhouse.
Yep.
You know, like
six friends at a table, you're ordering,
yes.
You're ordering drink and an extra thing of bread and everyone's having fun. We haven't seen each other in a couple of months. We're all together.
Right. Yeah. You don't have to worry about sticking your fork on someone's plate to grab, like, you know, get a French fry and, you know, and the buzz in a nice restaurant, especially like a steakhouse. And I miss that more. And I loved, you know, Billy Joel at Madison Square, you know, Billy Joel did concerts at Madison Square Garden every month. He did one show a month at MSG. So like, I would randomly decide like, oh, you know, let's go see, you know, go see Billy tonight.
Concert I saw was Billy's show in February, which I guess was the last one he did prior to the pandemic.
So you saw him at MSG in February. Yeah. That's right before the pandemic. Yeah.
Bon Jovi was the special guest.
Oh, okay. I should have been at that one. I miss that. I do miss being able to go to a concert. The movies
don't do it for me. Concert is huge. I think, and like as someone who covers the NFL, as corny as it sounds, there is something to walking onto a football field or walking into that stadium and having the rush of the crowd. I definitely miss that. But Jimmy, your point is right. Getting together with friends, and it's not that we can't get together right now. There's ways to do it. Just to not have the care of the world of, am I doing this right. is something I genuinely miss. I also miss stand-up comedy shows. I obviously am a fan. Like me and my wife would love going to see a stand-up comedy show in a small venue or whatever it is and see a comedian and laugh. Like, it's the weirdest stuff, but I brought all that up because, you know, Seinfeld had the whole article, New York's not dead. Yeah. And James Altucher responds and is like, no, actually it is dead. As I said, and as Seinfeld's writing that from a, you know, $13 million estate from the Hamptons, I'm wondering, as someone who does live in New York City, Jimmy, do you feel like New York is dead or do you feel like it's coming back?
I don't live in this city. I live on Long Island. I don't think the city is dead. I think it will be back if we can get control of this virus, which I think can happen if certain things happen, but I'm not going to get into that. And then, but here's the thing. Did you see the Jerry Seinfeld interview on 60 Minutes a couple of weeks ago?
I missed it. What did he say?
Because, okay, so I'm going to give you a little backstory here for you and the listeners. So he was interviewed on 60 Minutes by John Wertheim.
Yeah.
Iconic, legendary SI, John Wertheim. So Wertheim calls me. This was at the beginning of September, I think.
Really?
Or maybe the end of August. And he goes, just between us, you can't tell anyone. I'm interviewing Jerry Seinfeld for 60 minutes.
Oh my God.
He goes, can you send me 10 questions to ask him? I'll take you to the steak dinner.
Yeah.
He goes, because I know you know him, you know, you're in that world. So I send him the 10 questions. And John actually asked Jerry one of my questions, which was about buying the Mets. Because at that time, it looked like A-Rod and J-Lo were aggressively pursuing the Mets. So I said, ask him if he thought about it. And he gave a great answer. He's like, He goes, I got enough people yelling at me on the street about the Mets. I don't need more of it if I'm the owner.
And did it make the actual cut on the 60 and that, minutes?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome, yeah. Dude. Congrats. But, that's great.
So Wertheim asked him about that article and his response and burying the guy. And Wertheim said, you know, there's a lot of people who criticize you because of exactly what you just said, Shregs, about you're writing that from the Hamptons. And the, and Jerry just said, oh, shut up.
Wertheim
said, what do you say to those people? He's like, shut up. Who cares?
That's his right. And, you know, I don't, that's Jerry. I don't think Jerry ever is going to back down.
But see, I think, I looked at it
with Mark Maron, I guess probably at the start of the pandemic or middle, and like, you know, Maron has real issues with Jerry over the years, and they're two comedians. And he's like, you know, Mark Maron's critique of Seinfeld is that he doesn't really actually say anything of worth and never gets like self-reflective. And Seinfeld, to his credit, holds his ground and is like, I just want to be funny. Like, I'm not looking to change. Like, funny is what matters. And I'm nodding my head. I'm like, you know what? He's a comedian. I'm not looking for a philosopher at every time someone takes a stage.
What's wrong with just giving us life observations?
Yeah. No, it's...
you know. I do think... I will say this about... Because I get your point about he's writing this article about the city while he's in the Hamptons, et cetera. But I thought it was more of like... I thought the angle on it was more of like almost a PR thing. Like, let me stick up...
Yeah, it was.
For this
and
city.
I pumped my fist afterwards, dude. Like, I read it. Because I live in the city. I live in Brooklyn. There's construction, as there always is, going on right below me right now. And, you know, I'm going to be commuting in eventually back to Lower Manhattan every day. I don't want to hear... I made this decision to live here, raise a child here. Like, I liked hearing it. It was almost like rooting for a sports team and hearing someone say something good about your team. I was like, yeah, hell yeah. New York is coming back. Do I believe it? I hope so, man.
The other thing, you know, and it's weird too. I don't know if you felt this way. I definitely felt like in the summer, Corona was so much more tolerable because I was outside. You were at the beach. I was at the beach in the pool like almost every day I could get there. You know, it's going to be, I think, a little rough now. But so we, you know, I don't know. The movies, stand-up show, I think, is a good one. That's for sure. I would do that. Like, I miss that way more than going to the movies, like you said, going to see a stand-up. You know, New York City, that's such a thing to do is go see some.
Well, you pay rent like this. You choose to live here. You don't choose to live because you like the nightlife and the action.
Right.
And the fact that I can go see on a random Tuesday night, you know, walk five blocks and go see Mumford and Sons, like, you know, play a huge concert. And you take that away, you know, the advantages of having a backyard and living in some suburb makes a lot more sense, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You hit it the nail on the head, though. It's those nights in a row, you know, when SI was in Midtown, used to go to like Del Frisco's every now and then. Now we're downtown, so I go to Morton's, I don't know, once every few months.
It's great.
You miss that atmosphere. You really miss the atmosphere of
and
that.
The people watching and who's walking in and look at that couple. That's not his wife, that's his girlfriend. You know, all that stuff is great. That stuff's gone, dude. Yeah. And it's gone for now, but who knows? I'm hoping it comes back.
I did have a couple of football things to ask.
Let's do it.
But not hardcore. But what do you make? I mean, you know, I do this all the time in this podcast. You and I do it privately when we text. It's like, you know, we bash Twitter and how stupid it is. And blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there's still sports talk radio out there, which might be dumber than Twitter. They're going crazy in Boston now saying Belichick is done. Did you see this?
Well, it's not a crazy take. Like the Titans, well, I don't think he's done, but the Titans, you know, are the foil to the Patriots. So the Titans shut down their entire facility. They've got 30 guys with COVID. They've got to do everything virtually, and they come out and they blow the doors off the Bills. And then 5 days later, they beat the Texans in a great game in a shootout where they look like they're ready to take on the world. Patriots are virtual, and they look rusty. They look out of sorts. You know, there's a lot of talk from the players to local media saying things like, well, we'll see if we want to play or not, and all that. Like, I'm not saying I'm ever going to doubt Bill Belichick, but they're 2-3. They didn't look good against the Denver Broncos at home. And if any team should have looked rusty, it was the Broncos, who had been practicing nonstop, had their bye week taken away from them because of what happened with the coronavirus, and then came and traveled across the country and had a 1 o'clock game, you know, wiped the floor with the Patriots. There's concern. Look, the 49ers are coming in. We're doing this on a Tuesday afternoon. You and I are talking. The 49ers are coming in this weekend. If the Patriots win 30-10, all that looks ridiculous. But if the Patriots lose, I don't know, at 2-4 and half the team, you know, either had something with the coronavirus or has opted out, and Belichick is, you know, got a coach and a team with a bunch of turnovers, yeah, there's going to be questions.
Yeah, but there can be questions. But to say that this is now the fall of Bill Belichick, or the you know, he's on the downside of his career, I'm sorry. I don't care if they go 0-16 for the next 5 years. That should not be said about the guy.
Yeah, obviously. He's got a free pass in a lot of ways. Yeah. Not a free pass. He's earned that pass. But if you're going to tell me that Boston Sports Radio needs to do 3 hours every morning and they're not allowed to criticize the head coach after what that team looked like the last two times they took the field, then I disagree. I think it's all right. I don't know who said it.
Drake's coming in hot.
Well, this is the deal. We do Good Morning Football, and we get criticized for being this cheery, fun show that never takes shots at anybody. And it's because that's not the tone of our show. But this morning, I started to show them, like, you know, Nate Burleson, who I love, is like, Cowboys defense is an issue. And I'm like, Cowboys defense is an issue. Cowboys defense is historically the worst defense in the history of the game. Andy Dalton looks terrible. They didn't interview any other head coaches. They just gave Mike McCarthy the job after he, you know, hung out with Jerry Jones for 2 hours. And Zeke Elliott can't hold on to a football and is paying $60 million. So, like, Jets fans want a pound of flesh. Cowboys fans want a pound of flesh. If the Patriots fans want a pound of flesh this morning, I'm okay with that.
Wow. You're an animal.
This is it.
I said this on Twitter, half joking, but not totally joking, that Jerry should call Andrew Luck. Do you think we'll ever see Andrew Luck play again? Is he done?
I haven't heard a word from Andrew Luck.
No one has.
I had friends who coached him at Stanford that know him well. I got to know Andrew fairly well over doing a couple of interviews with him. Like, I know it's like a joke about him having like this, like, he is so off the grid. I don't, you know, his father is more relevant than he is. His father was the guy, you know, working with the XFL before that got shut down. Right. So, like, so off the grid. I don't know what kind of shape he's in. I don't know where he's been. But, like, how cool of a story and a jolt for the NFL would that be if he came out of the woodwork?
I'm telling you, I'm waiting for that one day where it's like, you know, Schefter's going to go on Twitter and be like, Andrew Luck. I mean, maybe not this year with Corona, but maybe next year, you know.
I don't even know where he's living. I don't know anything about him right now.
I just had a question now, and I told. Tua, are you excited for that? Do you think the Dolphins played it smart here? They announced him today. They have a bye week. Then they play the Rams. Is that a smart way for them to play it?
I don't know. Yes, I would say that they're 3-3, and the Bills have lost two in a row. The Patriots have lost two in a row, and the Jets aren't doing anything. Like, I don't know if there's a rush, but it's one of those things where those guys know. Like, we always talk out of our asses. Like, we don't know what's going on there. And look, if Tua's lighting up in practice and Tua has shown that he's capable of doing it and he's a better chance for them to win than Fitzpatrick, then it's time. So I would trust Brian Flores' decision on that. But it is curious, considering they've won a couple games in a row and the two teams ahead of them in the standings have dropped a couple in a row. It looks like the Dolphins are in striking distance. It's a weird time to do it.
That's what I thought. I mean, they could be there's an extra wild card team this year too.
They can win the AFC East. Here's the deal with the Bills, and I say this as a national sports media. It is so enticing to talk up the Bills because their fan base is so good, and they're so present on Twitter, and you'll get the likes and the retweets, and the Bills fans will rally around you, and they'll treat you like I'm sure Barstool loves them. I'm sure Kyle Brandt loves them. I'm sure all the people that know how to like galvanize a fan base and get you like, it's a very, very fun team to root for. There's something around the Bills that you want to see them good and you want to be a part of it because it's such a fun ride. They haven't been good the past 2 weeks. Yeah. And like, I don't know if we jumped the gun on crowning the Bills too soon this season.
I think most quarterbacks are bad. Whereas a lot of people think, like to me, I don't think Josh Allen is a good quarterback. Now, people are going to tell me about his arm, his legs, his this. But to me, when you throw picks in a big spot, I don't care about the others. Like, I always thought Jay Cutler was a terrible NFL quarterback. People thought he was good.
Yeah.
So I never got on the Bills bandwagon for that reason. But
He threw for 122 yards yesterday in a game that was built for them to win. That's a rainy, cold weather. You know, here comes this team on the road that's coming off a loss, and they're a finesse team that throws the ball over the yard. And the Chiefs came in and played the Bills brand of football. And when Mahomes needs to make a play, he hits Byron Pringle for a 30-yard completion. And when Josh Allen needs to make a play, threw an interception to Daniel Sorensen. It's nothing against Josh Allen. It's just that we were talking MVP 4 weeks into the season, and that's just not what he is. Not yet.
Well, that's anyone who talks MVP 4 weeks into the season.
I mean, I know this is what, dude, we have this like existential problem as a sports media where we talk.
The MVP stuff is bizarre to me.
MVP is crazy. Like, no one actually. Yeah. It's crazy. It's in an MVP conversation as a topic. Like, well, literally
that shouldn't happen until week 10.
But literally anyone is like right now, if you were to say, and like, we're going to do it, but is Derrick Henry in the MVP conversation? What's my answer?
Well, like,
sure, again, I guess also, like, what's the matter? What's the stakes here? Like, yes.
Well, it's fine, also what's the criteria? Like how you judge, I mean, you know, you could easily say, Derrick Henry, like you said, but I have a feeling, you know, if we had this conversation, let's say 3-4 weeks from now, the answer is going to be Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I mean, he's rolling now.
They're rolling. Well,
I don't know how they lost to the Bears, though. That is
a weird game. It was a weird game, and they surrendered 0 sacks on Sunday, and they had 0 penalties on Sunday, yeah. And they turned the ball over 0 times.
Yeah, I saw you tweet. That was a good
yeah, and it's like the week before, they were getting clobbered. It's one of those deals. But I picked the Bucks in the Super Bowl, and I'm going to wear it either way. I mean, good or bad, I'm going to go down with the ship on that one. I think they're loaded on defense, and he's really, really good. I still think he is.
Well, that's the thing. Everyone wanted to hype Rodgers. You know, at the beginning of the season, there's so much Lamar Jackson. Like, to me, Brady is still the second best quarterback in the NFL behind Mahomes.
And you would not see him on a list. Like, if someone said, list your top 5 quarterbacks, no, it's all Russell Wilson and Rodgers and a lot of these young cats. No one ever gives Brady. It's almost like Brady's underrated.
I would go Mahomes 1, Brady 2. If you had my criteria is this: if you had to play a game, if you had to play the Super Bowl tomorrow and win the Super Bowl. Yeah. I'd go Mahomes 1, Brady 2, and I'd probably go Wilson 3.
Yeah, and that's fair. Yeah. Rodgers not on that list, though, huh?
He'd be 4.
Yeah.
But again, you know, well.
Next week he could be 2. That's the point of it all. Yeah.
Tell me, what is your, I want to know what your Sunday, like, setup is. Like, you do your show for Fox.
New. It's all new because
how do you watch
at
the games?
A stadium. I'm either at a stadium or.
I want the Schrager Sunday.
In the studio, but this has been a crazy. I mean, you want to talk crazy experience. I've never watched the Red Zone until this year. First time I ever
hate
watched
the Red Zone.
Jimmy, it's not for me.
I hate it.
I love Andrew Siciliano. He's a friend.
Yeah.
I know Scott Hansen. He's a friend. Right. I can't watch an NFL Sunday jumping game to game with that hysteric pace when I like storyline. I like process. Right. I like plot. So what I do have is I've got the NFL Game Pass situation. I put it up. I hook it up to my TV, and I go game to game on my own accord. I dictate what game.
But can you watch more than one game at once?
No.
Okay.
But I'll look at the scores. I want to pick what game it's going to be on because I appreciate what those guys are doing. But when you see the AJ Brown overtime or play at the end, what you missed was the drive that led to it or the Vrabel, 12 men on the field penalty, which everyone was talking about 2 days later, but in the broadcast was covered just fine. Like, I need story, I need context, and then I can speak about it eloquently. But when you're just showing me Chandler Canizaro's on for the field goal, and now we're going to this one, and Emmanuel Sanders has a 17-yard run for a score, like, I have no concept of what's happening in the game.
Can you not, you can't get Sunday Ticket where you live? Is that the, like, DirecTV?
No, I don't have DirecTV. I'm in an apartment building. So we've got the Game Pass, and with these new phones, you can, like, hook it all up. It's crazy. So I see it all, and I like listening to all the different broadcasts. I know I like hearing some of those.
You know about the illegal streams?
I don't, and I don't want to get there because I feel like today's day and age of Zooms and cameras, I don't need anything illegal near me. Okay, buddy? I'm just saying.
Is that a Jeffrey Toobin reference?
I'm not making any references. I'm just saying, not my style, not what I would do, but I don't need any more problems and I don't need any more screens.
I'll send you the links. This is my issue at Red Zone. And like you said, Andrew Siciliano seems like one of the best guys in sports media because I had written a column last year about
last year was my first year.
Yeah, really is. And last year was my first year with Red Zone after 20 years of Sunday Ticket, which I got rid of. And I hated the Red Zone. And I wrote a column about, like, I think I'm the only person because people on Twitter just orgasm over the Red Zone every Sunday. And I was like, I must be the only person in America who doesn't like it. And Andrew Siciliano responded, came on my podcast, could not have been a nicer guy. But this is my issue, and this isn't his fault. On Sunday afternoon, okay, so their whole thing is any game that's in the Red Zone, they have to show. That's their shtick. I don't need to see Giants Washington football team.
I hear you.
In the red zone, when these are two of the worst teams in the NFL, when the Titans and Texans are tied, give me the Titans with the ball at their own 20, ready to start a drive, instead of the Washington football team in the red zone. No one gives a shit. Give me the games that matter when it's late. That's my issue with the red zone. But they're called the red zone, so they have to show everything that's in the red zone. It's annoying. Yeah.
There's a lot, you know, it's one of those deals where this is a 1% problem. We were kids. We were watching the CBS, whatever game we got, the national game.
I know you're just like me on this one. Think about though, when you were a kid, 13, 14, 15, you're watching CBS.
And now to another game.
And Pat Summerall would say, we have a game break.
Right?
And the studio would the excitement. And like
you'd see that Tampa creamsicle uniform and be like, oh my God, the Buccaneers are on television. Oh my God. Rush. Like, what's happening? Yeah. I know. Eric Rett just scored another touchdown. That was cool. I miss, and our show tries to give that as much honor. Like, I miss just traditional NFL primetime with Boomer and Tom Jackson. And I think NBC does a really good job of it. Like, that pregame show with Tirico before the Sunday night game, when all the other games are done and Fox is off the air and 60 Minutes is on CBS, if you put it on, they do a good job giving you the best sound of the day, but it's not the 90 Minutes Boomer and TJ. But
see, I never watched the NBC show because either Fox or CBS has a game that's running almost up until the... And then I use that little window of time to either make or get dinner.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. I love Tirico, and I think that show helps inform me, just crystallize some thoughts for our Monday morning show, because Sims, and I guess it's Rodney Harrison and Dungy, like, it's a studio show, whatever it is, but like last week they broke down Cam Newton's fourth and 10 pass. I didn't see it earlier in the day because the game wasn't on, and I just wasn't, like, that's where you're gonna see it. So I think there is still a place for highlights and recap stuff, I don't necessarily need the knee-jerk content. I mean, I feel like it's a roller coaster ride, and a lot of people like that feeling. I've got enough stress in my life. I don't need to hear 60 different games going on at once.
Yeah. I miss primetime. That was always so great. Because you saw highlights you didn't see. But by the time 8 o'clock was around, you've seen every highlight.
It's on the phone. It's also the first year that I'm like on my phone during games, and that's terrible too. The knee-jerk reactions and everyone trying to one-up each other with a meme or something funny or some observation or some knock on the Jets. Like, it's such a cesspool. So I sound like an arrogant person here. I'm not using the phone on Sundays also for Twitter. I don't need that.
I don't check, read, use Twitter at all on Sundays until probably like halftime of the 4 o'clock. I don't do it at all during the 1 o'clock games. There's too many games to pay attention to. And I really don't care about everyone's like little jokes about what's going on.
Yeah. But I also feel like that's during the pandemic, probably a nice outlet for a lot of people, like community wise, if they weren't able to watch with friends or not go to the sports bar or go to the game. So
yeah,
I'd be interested in seeing if everyone feels that way. For me personally, I don't need, you know, the pithy joke from the writer. I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. Before I let you go, give me anything we're watching during the pandemic here that we need to know about. Give me.
One of them is the Swedish show, and it is so
sweet. S-W-E-T or Swedish?
Sweet. Sweet.
Okay.
And Love on the Spectrum on Netflix. Have you heard of it?
Okay. I have not.
It is an Australian show.
Okay.
With kids with autism and Asperger's, and they're in their 20s and their 30s.
Right.
And it's them looking for romance. And it sounds like this is a crazy premise, and it sounds like it is the most beautiful show. This show is not, it's not artistically done. It is funny. It is good.
Right.
If you need a pick me up, but also a good laugh, because these kids are incredible. I say kids, a lot of them are 25, 26.
Interesting.
Love on the Spectrum. Okay. That is my one. I'm 5 episodes. You will love it. Number 2, there is a show on the Reels Network, R-E-E-L-Z. Okay. Yeah. Remember Making the Band when we were watching it as kids? Behind the Music on VH1, and it was like, here's the dirty story of Styx and how Dennis DeYoung took the band down. Reels has a show called Breaking the Band, and it's all about how bands break up, famous bands, and why they broke up. But they use actors as actors to recreate the scene. Dude, it's the trashiest TV. It's so good. When Eddie Van Halen died, they ran the Van Halen one. And it was amazing about how, you know, David Lee Roth did this and Sammy Hagar did this. And then I DVR'd it And I watched the Journey one. I watched the Beatles one. I watched the Led Zeppelin one. It is on a network I didn't know existed.
Right.
The Reels Network, R-E-E-L-Z. And then if there's a third show, because these are the recommendations you're coming to Jimmy Trina's podcast for. You want to hear my Love on the Spectrum and my Breaking the Band.
Those are two good ones so far.
I got into a show with my wife. It's not Breaking Bad and it's not Mad Men. This show is called Little Fires Everywhere and it's on Hulu.
Okay, now the one thing that concerns me about that is that my 15-year-old niece watches that show. So okay. Is she watching something inappropriate or are you guys watching something that's for younger people?
Jimmy, it's set in 1997.
Okay.
And it is dripping in nostalgia.
Okay.
Dripping. I'm talking soundtrack, wardrobe, references. Stars Reese Witherspoon and our guy Joshua Jackson, who we loved in Mighty Ducks and Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
From The Creek. The Creek.
Yeah, The Creek. I just read that The Creek is coming to Netflix. So that's
is exciting. It? Everyone loves their Vanderbeek. I'm more of a Jackson guy. Jackson and then Kerry Washington. I'm going blank. What's
Katie
the
Holmes?
No.
Katie Holmes, Michelle Williams?
No, not that. I'm talking, is it Kerry Washington or Kelly Washington, who's in Scandal?
Kerry Washington is on Scandal.
Yeah, she's the other lead in this thing. So okay. These are three heavy hitters.
Yeah.
The kid actors are incredible. Little fires everywhere.
What is it about?
Everyone else is. It's 1997, Shaker Heights, Ohio, a small town in Ohio. And there is a couple things that happen in the town, but it goes back and forth. There's time and it's your 1997 nostalgia. That if you want to hear a little Alanis Morissette, if you want to hear a little garbage, I'm only happy when it rains. This is the soundtrack to the show and the acting is fantastic. So I would say there's some parts you're like, this writing's terrible. And then you're like, actually, the show's really good. I like it. So I'm going to throw that one out there. Little fires everywhere.
Okay, so this is good. This is a good way to end this. Since you mentioned Alanis.
Yeah.
And a show about 1997 and all the nostalgia. The Ringer, I think it was last week, put out a tweet asking people what the three most definitive songs of the 90s were.
Oh, wow. And is there a list? Did they do a list or they didn't?
So I only saw it because Greg Wyshynski, who covers the NHL.
Hockey, right?
Yeah, NHL for ESPN, longtime blogger and probably the best at covering the NHL. He had retweeted it and he had named Smells Like Teen Spirit, which I thought was an obvious one.
But to you, is that, like, I know it reminds us of the 90s.
Well, it's not for you.
Cultural significance, is that one of your favorite songs? Like, if that song comes on, are you like, hell yeah, Nirvana?
No, it's not one of my favorites, but I think it is one of the definitive songs of the 90s. It's not one of my, but he also mentioned, he went with TLC and he mentioned Creep. And I had responded to him and said,
Waterfalls,
I'm fascinated you went Creep over Waterfall.
I know.
So if you had three definitive songs of the 90s or your three favorite 90s songs, I hate when people ask me these questions on the spot because you always forget something and you have to think it. But I think his other one was Britney, Baby One More Time.
Yeah, that's fair. That was
my
list,
because you said it, that's what triggered it. My list would have to have You Oughta Know on it in the top three.
You Oughta Know is good. Like, I think of Montel Jordan's This Is How We Do It as
choice.
A great 90s song. As far as ballads go, either Puffy doing I'll Be Missing You, the remake of the Police song, was very 90s. But Bryan Adams, Everything I Do It For You, is a great 90s song.
Oh my God, that's not a good one.
Not a great song, but it's a 90s song. But like to me, like Semi-Charmed Life by Third Eye Blind. Bittersweet Symphony by The Verve. I think
those
type of songs. Dishwalla, Counting Blue Cars. Like those are the type of songs that are 90s to me.
I think you got to have I Want It That Way on the list from the back.
Yeah, dude, and that's okay. It was the time. Yeah. It was the time. If you want to say Livin' La Vida Loca, I'm not going to laugh you out of the room. It was the time. But yeah, I mean, everything from
Alanis has to be on that list. That album, that song, those two songs were just.
I think there's a good debate of insane. The most 90s songs, which include If You Wanna Be My Lover, or the best 90s song, which none of those songs belong on the same list.
Like, there's a difference between what's universally thought of as the best and what's your favorite. Like, Smells Like Teen Spirit, it wouldn't crack my top 100 songs.
Yes, and I don't, I'm thinking about, like, my high school songs and, like, what was big, and, I guess there's a million Mariah Carey songs that came out, and right. that I wouldn't put any of those on the on my favorite, but yet when I hear them, I'm like, I know exactly where I was right. when I heard Butterfly for the first
time. But I'm also, you know? I don't consider myself a 90s expert by any stretch. Like, I'm an 80s expert, not a 90s okay. expert. So I leave the 90s stuff to other people who know better.
You're a big Frankie Goes to Hollywood gets you going instead. Yes.
No. Culture Club.
Tommy Two-Tone.
Duran Duran.
Adam Ant.
You know, Prince, Michael Jackson, Madonna.
Yeah.
You know, that was.
I feel like I date myself, but like, if you were to ask me like the quintessential song of 2020, I probably wouldn't even know the top 10. Like I. No, like I'm probably thinking like Sam Smith or The Weeknd. Like I like that Blinding Lights song.
I hate that Blinding Lights
song. I like it. I like that Watermelon Sugar.
Yes, Harry Styles for sure.
But if you start saying
if you know the TikTok, then Savage Love by Jason Derulo is.
I don't know it.
It's a biggie. Yeah.
It's a big one. I got it. Yeah. Okay. All right.
And then Ariana Grande and Lady Gaga did a duet. I forgot the name of the song. My niece.
So that was like for a generation, Jimmy. Like that song is going to bring up some real memories. And for us, it's like, all right, like whatever, you know. And I guess that's how it is.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Sinead O'Connor's not pumping out Nothing Compares to You right now. I'll tell you that. If a song like that came out, I would know it.
That is an icon. Was that 90s or 80s?
It might
have
been
80s. Probably 90. I bet that was 1990, right on the edge.
Yeah, songs like that.
That was a huge song.
You get Wilson Phillips' Hold On or a Roxette song. I mean, those are songs. I don't know if there's any pop songs now that are doing it for me like that.
Are you sick of the guy with the Fleetwood Mac and the cranberry juice?
No, I thought it was funny. I don't see it enough where I'm like, oh, it's everyone's doing it. It's done. Like I thought it was so bizarre.
They did a great job. Fox did a great job on what was the Thursday night game? The last Thursday night game, because there was no Thursday night game last.
Bears Bucks.
Because
I heard Ian Eagle did it.
Oh, that's right. It was Joe Buck. That's right. Yeah. It was Ian
Eagle did it.
It was Ian
doing
the Chiefs game.
Raiders. Yeah. Yes. And it was great. Yeah. Ian's amazing.
Ian and Joe Buck are very similar with their senses of humor. That's why
they're actual human beings and they're funny and hilarious. They're funny. Yeah. They're great.
And CBS played the Dreams Going to Break and Ian said he was craving a cranberry juice.
Yeah. And that's a perfect symmetry. That's well done. That's it. But this is why I love doing your podcast. We talked about coronavirus and we jumped to Sinead O'Connor in a matter of minutes.
Yeah. Well, and also like, here's what's funny too. I feel like one thing we have in common is we get mad about stupid things and not madly. Like, for instance, I'll give you two things. So Chris Russo, who we both love, last week was going ballistic, going crazy for hours because Joe Buck blew off game set, which is not his decision. It's Fox's decision. Didn't do game 7 of the NLCS because he went to do the Packers and Bucks. And I'm listening to that. And I'm like, a human being cannot be this upset about this, that Joe Buck is calling the foot, you know. But then I was thinking about it, and I saw today that Nance and Romo are calling Niners Patriots.
Yeah.
And I got all upset that they're not calling Steelers Titans.
Like, no,
so
wait a
like
second.
We all get like, you know, these weird things that bother us. I feel a kinship with people.
I'm with you on a lot of your tweets though that you send out when there's like a Tuesday night football game and you're like, hell yes. I like it. Like, yeah. I'm here for it, dude. Same deal.
But
like
this is where I get nervous. I get nervous sending that tweet because people are like, we only have this game because of Corona. Coronavirus.
Like, the truth of the matter is, when we were growing up, I'll never forget the Jeffrey Mayer game and watching that from a transistor TV, which used to exist in a high school locker room after a basketball practice. Because that game, the Jeffrey Mayer game in 1996, happened at like 4:30 p.m. Eastern. Yeah. Like it used to be where there would be sports in the daytime. I'll be honest with you. I love Fox. They're my employers. I can't stay up for 9 innings when the game starts at 8:30. I sound like Chris Russo and I sound like Francesa here, but like,
well, you're on TV at 7 in the morning. So
yeah, I don't think I'm alone in people my age. So like, I just, you know, I miss the days of when a baseball playoff game could start at 2 p.m. and not everyone's going to freak out about it.
Oh, but you get some extra sleep now though that you're working from home, right? What's the difference? Like when you were in studio, when did you wake up? And now when do you wake up?
Studio, we wake up around 4, and then now we're doing it probably around 5. So it's a solid hour. But the best part is you don't have to commute in and out of the city. You're kind of rolling out of bed and doing the show. You hope that you put a brush through your hair. It's a crazy time, dude. I'm going to remember this quarantine and try to have as many good thoughts about it as possible because it does reset things a bit and put things in perspective. But gosh, doing TV from literally, I live in like a 1400 square foot apartment in Brooklyn. Can't hide money, Jimmy. And I'll tell you, like, we took a closet and we reconstructed it, and it's a studio for where millions of people are watching TV every morning. Yeah. It's just amazing. If you told me 6 months ago it was possible, I'd say hell no, but we made it work. So whatever it is, man.
Well, the show is still great. Still the best.
Appreciate it.
Morning sports show on TV. Good Morning Football, Monday through Friday on the NFL Network. And you can see Peter Schrager on Sundays on Fox at 11 a.m. Eastern. I call it the pre-game show.
It's great. I like that. It's called NFL Kickoff, and I will tell you this. It's really good.
It's a good show.
11 a.m. every Sunday on Fox.
The problem is I'm never home at 11 a.m.
That's fine,
Sunday.
And I get it, especially in the fall in New York City. You don't want to be sitting at home. I get it. I'm not going to fight for our viewers, but I'll say if there are other options, and I understand that, but our show is really good.
There you go. All right, Shregs, I love when you come on. Thanks for doing it. I appreciate it.
You're the man, dude. Thanks, Jimmy.
Right. Take care. Be well. Stay safe. All right, my thanks to Peter Schrager for coming on and chopping it up with me. Always love talking to Shregs. If you missed any past episodes of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, they're in the archives. Give them a listen. Ernie Johnson, host of Inside the NBA last week, Jim Miller 2 weeks ago, Al Michaels, Dan Patrick, Kevin Harlan, all recent guests right here on the SI Media Podcast. So give them a listen, rate, and review if possible. Appreciate you guys tuning in. That wraps up this episode, and we'll see you next week right here. Take care.